Welcome to Credits Due, the podcast where we break down an actor's filmography one movie at a time. I am Ben Cron, and joining me today is Tyler Owen.
What's up?
And Neil Potter.
I'm ready to rumble. How about you guys?
I am ready to rumble, actually, because we have a great show for you today. We are talking, we are on part 11 on our series on Will Smith, and we are talking about the 2007 movie I Am Legend. It is directed by Francis Lawrence, his second appearance on this podcast, because he directed the amazing Constantine with Keanu Reeves.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And this I Am Legend stars Will Smith. And then that's basically it.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, as always, of course, we'll start with some film trivia on I Am Legend, then we'll dive right into our spoiler-filled discussion on the movie. Then we'll end with some final thoughts on Will Smith, and then leave with some recommendations. So let's start with film trivia. Tyler, you got something for us?
I do. In fact, we have a theme for this week. We are going to be looking at four bits of trivia for I Am Legend, and one of them is the fake. You guys will have to figure out which one I made up, and they all have to do with directors.
Oh.
So, number one, before Will Smith was brought on as the lead, Ridley Scott was working on an adaptation in 1998 with Arnold Schwarzenegger starring, but production was shut down after going far over budget. Number two, Guillermo del Toro was Will Smith's first choice to direct when the project was revived, but he turned down the offer so he could make Hellboy 2 The Golden Army. Number three, Michael Bay was then set to direct the film back in 2002, but Bay and Smith decided to do Bad Boys 2 instead. Number four, Warner Brothers was then interested in Zack Snyder to direct hot off the remake of Dawn of the Dead, but he turned it down, saying that he didn't want to get stuck making zombie movies. All right. Which one is the fake, guys?
I gotta go with Zack Snyder.
All right. Though,
I mean, I'm hesitant, but that's what I'm gonna go with.
There's a bit of hint... A little hint, spoiler of Zack Snyder, I think, in this movie that I'll touch on later. But I'm going to go with... I'm going to go with C, the third one.
Michael Bay?
Yeah, the Michael Bay one.
Oh, man. Ben, I was really surprised how quickly you figured that one out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, Zack Snyder, as far as I could tell, did not have anything to do attached to this movie before it was filmed.
The tell was Zack Snyder getting worried that he was going to get stuck in something because he's done like three superhero movies.
Oh, damn it.
I tested these trivia on my wife before we started, and originally I had that Warner Brothers was interested in both Zack Snyder and Francis Lawrence, and they did a game of rock, paper, scissors to decide who would direct.
Yeah, that's...
And she said that was too easy.
Too goofy.
Oh, yeah. God.
All right. Let's get into this. First of all, I have a correction to make, guys.
Uh-oh.
I made a slight joke in the last episode when I was previewing in the what we're gonna talk about next. Mm-hmm. I made the joke. I said, "I Am Legend, the greatest story ever told," and that was a misquote on my bad. So I am a big At the Movies fan. If you guys are familiar with that show, it's a review show that was started by Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And when Gene Siskel died, they passed it on. They passed the hosting duties on to Ben Mangowitz and Ben Lyons, the two Bens. not the reason I like that show, but a good reason. So Ben Lyons is a big, he was obviously doing at the movies. He became a very popular film critic, and there was a huge amount of backlash because he is like a Jay Leno type. Like, he's on everyone's side. He never like says anything bad. And on the poster for I Am Legend, he has a pull quote in giant font that says, "The greatest movie ever made."
Wow. So,
oh my God.
So I got that. That was a jab at Ben Lyons that I was trying to say. And I apologize for misquoting him. But guys, I Am Legend. Greatest movie ever made.
That's the topic today.
Yes.
Guys, this movie has a great first and arguably second act, and mm-hmm. then it's just a steaming pile of shit third act.
I second that motion to say the same thing.
Like, I'm visibly angry right now. If you were here to see me,
well.
Yeah. I'm so mad. I had to even spend money to rent this. Like, it would be one thing if the movie were just bad, but it has such a promise of being good, and then just completely shits the bed. And I have a feeling we'll get deep into that because. From what I've researched and found out about this movie, it's basically a poster boy for studio intervention, and it makes me so angry.
Oh, good. Yeah, I'd like to hear about that. I did not know this was a victim of that.
Yeah. So are either of you familiar with the source material, I Am Legend, the 1954 book, or any of the spinoffs that have kind of come from that?
Vaguely. I've never read the book, and I know that you're a fan of the graphic novel, Tyler.
Yes.
I have only seen the movie The Omega Man, which mm-hmm. was based off of the book.
Mm. Right. And that is that's a Charlton Heston, mm-hmm. Like 1968 maybe movie.
Yeah, I think so. 60s somewhere.
That's also very loosely based on the source material. Mm-hmm. Just almost insultingly so. Both of these adaptations do not do justice to the book. I'll say I've never actually read the book, but I have read the graphic novel, and the graphic novel is almost a one-to-one direct adaptation of the original book. So I would definitely like to read it at some point, but the graphic novel is excellent. So I don't know if you guys care about getting those differences spoiled for you. It will go a long ways for me explaining why I think this movie is terrible in comparison once we get there.
Yeah, I would love to hear that. Yeah,
sure.
I would also like to hear the differences.
All right.
But yeah, let's go. Let's really like dissect this first act because, as you said, Tyler, I agree with you. I think the first act of this movie, I think, is like a work of art.
Yeah,
it's so good.
Yeah, the one-man show bits of this movie, I think, are the best parts, for sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it starts off with kind of some vaguely exposition-like dialogue of a TV show. And in a pretty funny joke, it just starts with a black screen, and there's just voiceover. I think it might be over credits, but I don't remember there being credits, but mm-hmm. anyways, it's voiceover of like a sports talk show. And then they throw to a news anchor And that's when, like, talking heads pop up. And it's a news anchor interviewing a scientist talking about how they've cured cancer. And in my notes, I wrote down, you've cured cancer? Smash cut to apocalypse. Yeah. Right after that question.
Bold.
Right after that question, it goes to 3 years later. A title card comes up that says 3 years later, and it's New York City, I think Times Square, actually. And it's just like, it's just like ruined buildings. Like there's like grass coming out of the roads, and there's like abandoned cars everywhere. Not a single human in sight. And then you see Will Smith like just driving down the road at like 100 miles an hour in like a nice fancy sports car.
Yeah, were a parody, the only thing that would need to be added to turn that into a punchline is a womp womp.
Yeah.
Or like a total Curb Your Enthusiasm joke where it's like, we've cured cancer. Bum, 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 ba-da-da, ba-da-da, ba-da-da. And it's like, then it just shows like the wasteland, which is New York now.
And then it's just a lot of, it's a lot of just Will Smith just going around with a dog and, kind of hunting, and like, they don't explain for a while what he's actually doing, but he's essentially, I don't know what he's doing, just like keeping busy. And then like, trying to capture these like zombie vampires, like these infected people, to like research on them because he's alone is trying to find a cure. Mm-hmm. And I think they very geniusly never talk about these. I'm just going to call them zombie vampires because that's basically what they are.
Yeah.
So they never talk about these zombie vampires, but they very smartly tease them, and they like raise the stakes by like showing him worried and like his alarm going off, and then they don't. The scene where they finally show them is like a work of like horror, like genius.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's very. There's very few dialogue, like from Will Smith, which is kind of funny when you think about it.
Yeah.
But it's like perfect, like world building and setting up stakes. And it's there's great tension. Like this, the first act is incredible for me, but
I was going to say there is no dialogue. But the one thing that kind of actually irked me a little bit when it's just kind of like this first act where it's just Will Smith, when he actually does initiate in dialogue that's not like him keeping a audio log of like his scientific findings, he looks like a crazy person because he like talks to like mannequins and stuff. Like he has stories for him and stuff. And I'm like, it kind of bugged me a little bit because I'm like, I don't know if you'd probably go crazy if you were the only one there and you'd probably be doing that stuff. But it seemed like he was pretty well put together. It seemed like this was like, all right, we've got Will Smith. Let him riff off these like these mannequins for a bit to see like if we can kick up a little bit of humor or something like that. And I thought it was kind of unnecessary.
Yeah. It's a classic example for me of where they try to tell characterization through scenes rather than the character. And so they try to establish him, like you said, as having like a crazy streak for being alone for 3 years or whatever. But they do that with the writing of an individual scene that seems to come out of nowhere. Like there's nothing else in his character that we had seen up until that point that would imply he's gone nuts.
Yeah.
But that was very distinctly something that like a an insane person does. Like, that yeah. was a lot of work to set up a fake video store with a bunch of mannequins. Like, yeah, so that I feel like that's why it doesn't work, is because there's no setup, no like little mannerisms that he has.
Yeah, and so this mannequin scene in what is essentially a Tower Records, right? And it's so what was so weird about it is not only that he is like that he is like going in and talking to all these mannequins, but it's obvious that he like reconstructed this entire store, right? Like everything is organized in a spot. Like if you think about like people evacuating, like this building would obviously be like just wrecked, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he completely sets it up, and it's he's basically using it as his own video library, but he also sets up all these mannequins in all these different places. Like there's someone at a cashier, and there's people like walking into the store, and then there's this woman who's looking at movies that he like is pretend flirting with. And it's like full on like psychotic breakdown, right? And
yeah,
it's played as a joke, and it doesn't come back for a while. And you never really get a sense that he is going crazy, that he is like, he's kind of like losing touch on reality, because he's essentially, aside from the dog, he's essentially alone in this giant city.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it was just so fucked up. It was more terrifying. This one single scene was more terrifying than anything else in the entire movie.
Yeah, it's that first, like, I don't know, the closest thing I can compare watching that scene is like you're going along great, and then it's like you miss the bottom step.
Yes.
Like,
yeah,
when you're going down the stairs, like that's what it felt like watching the scene. Like, oh god, what happened? This movie made a weird turn. I'm not sure I like it. It's such a bizarrely placed scene, but I mean, it does have that payoff a little later, but not like, I don't know. I feel like they could have done that a lot better.
The payoff did not like, work for me though.
No, me neither.
So I feel like the payoff, so the scene where this finally kind of actually has relevance then is later on when he's doing his adventuring throughout New York, he sees Fred, the mannequin, at the, is it Grand Central Station or something like that?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And he, as he's driving by, it's like just out there in the open. Mm-hmm. And he obviously freaks out. Like, I don't remember putting Fred there. What the hell's going on? And
he yells,
I feel like,
Fred, if you're real, you better tell me right now, as he's pointing a gun at Fred.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that, I feel like that would have worked so much better if part of his routine involved going past a mannequin in a storefront window all the time. And he just called it Fred.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Because Fred, like, is the cashier guy, right? He calls the cashier dude Fred, I think.
Or it might have been, I think,
but that's only once.
The one with the hoodie was the one like that he had standing outside the door that he opens the door for or whatever. But yeah, that it felt a little odd that they went so deep down the like, oh, he's crazy route.
Yeah.
Like what? I feel like he could have acted the scene where he finds the mannequin misplaced exactly the same, even without the like previous setup of him having done this as like his own little tableau of mannequins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. My thing is, like, did I miss something? Like, was it Was it there? Like, did he put it there? Why is it there? Was it always there?
I had
there?
The same
like,
question.
No, okay, so this is where we're going to start to get into the differences between the book and the movie and the studio interference. So we need to get through a little bit more of the movie first, though, before we jump into that. So we'll keep trucking, and I'll touch you all in on that.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, so let's back up to this scene where they first introduce the zombie vampires, and they are Will Smith and his dog are chasing down a deer, and the deer runs into a darkened building, and the dog follows the deer. And this is like, I mean, if you've seen the movie before, you know that like these vampires are like hiding in darkness. So of course they would, it's very possible that they would be in this building that has no lights in it. But it's still, at this point, still kind of unclear the rules of these monsters. So Will Smith starts freaking out and follows his dog into this building. And it's this very long scene of him going through darkness with a gun and just like walking down this hallway. And I think it's like thinking back to Constantine and then this movie, like Francis Lawrence does horror great, like this kind of comic book horror amazingly.
Yeah.
And Will Smith is, this I think is his best acting scene in this movie. I thought it was absolutely incredible for just basically face acting. There's no, it's the amount of, the range of emotion that he shows in his face is absolutely stunning. And you never see anywhere else in this movie.
I also really loved the detail of him like almost randomly and panickingly covering his light.
Yeah.
There's like almost no rhyme or reason to it. And you can see it's like this, he has this battle in his mind. Like if I use the light, they'll see me. But if I don't use the light, I can't find my dog. And he's just constantly covering and uncovering his light. And it just almost like with no regard for his own safety at times, but then others like just cowering in a corner somewhere. And that struggle felt so real. Like, man, how much am I willing to risk for this only thing that I have, my dog, you know?
Yeah.
It was really relatable to me in that moment. I thought that was pretty cool too.
Is this the same portion of the movie where he gets his dog? Does this is where he sets the trap after this visit, or is that a
yes?
No? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. After this visit.
Yeah, they escape, and then he immediately catches one of them. And this is also when they finally show how sunlight affects them, because like he jumps out a window and like two of them follow him, and then they like immediately get burned by the sunlight. And it's one of those, it's this like show don't tell kind of thing that everyone says. Like I thought this whole scene just like perfectly explained all the rules of these monsters in a great like action sequence.
Yeah, I would even say for me personally, I thought that like you said, that worked pretty well, the show don't tell aspect of the monsters, but I think that they ceased to be scary as soon as you see their faces.
Oh, yeah.
This movie is inexplicably bad with its CGI, and I don't even think it's a product of the time it was made. Like I remember when I saw this movie in theaters, I was like, this is horrendous looking. Like these creatures are awful. Yeah.
It's not the CG. It's just the design of them.
True, true. Yeah, my wife called them like mummy mouths. Yeah. Like they just have that dumb stretchy jaw. Yeah. Looks so stupid. But that first moment you get a glimpse of them when he flashes his flashlight in that room and they're all like turned in towards each other and like breathing quickly, mm-hmm. and you can't see their faces. That was fucking terrifying. And yeah, like, but that's the only time they ever are scary.
I would say that when you finally see them, you're like, oh, they look just kind of goofy. They're not really that scary. Yeah. And then I even thought introducing that the one that was like their boss, like the head honcho one that seemed to know what he was doing, I guess. I thought that made them also less scary, in my opinion, because they weren't like this hive mind animalistic thing anymore. They were like, oh, there's one that's got some kind of vendetta or something that seems like. And you're like,
and they never set him up well at all.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear your guys' thoughts on the differences, because this stuff is so infuriating.
Yeah. There's one thing I want to touch on real quick before we get there. It's just one scene that I want to touch on where I touched on Zack Snyder before. It's towards this beginning portion of the movie, and there's a wide shot of Will Smith walking through when he's tracking the second deer or whatever. And on one of the Times Square things, there's a giant Batman symbol with a Superman logo behind it. Like, you could tell at this point that they wanted to do Batman and Superman related material and put them in the same movie together. It was unheard of.
I gotta biggest what's that quote, biggest crossover of all time.
I have some
info on that for you. I got some trivia.
Does it have anything to do with Akiva Goldman also being a screenwriter on this, because he wrote Batman and Robin, I think.
Oh,
like,
man.
The really bad Batman movie.
I'm not sure. This movie was being made, I think, at the same time as Batman Begins. So the Chris Nolan Batman reboot.
It would have been the third one, I think. Right?
No.
2007?
Yeah, Batman Begins came out in 2005. So
it'd be The Dark Knight then, right?
Well, this movie had a really long production history, because I went through, like, it was being worked on by Ridley Scott back in, like, 1998. It's been making the rounds for a long time.
So, according to the director, Francis Lawrence, the producer, it might be Akiva Goldsman, but... the producer worked on this Batman and Superman movie, which I think was called Batman and Superman.
Yeah.
And at the time, I don't think it ever made it past like being scripted. But so they were kind of like throwing around, oh, we're going to recast Superman, both Superman and Batman, for this new movie, and then let their solo movies just be their own. But then when Batman Begins was coming out and was very popular, they were like, oh, well, we're just going to get Christian Bale and then Brandon Routh, who was Superman in Superman Returns. And they're like, oh, we're just going to do a crossover. But I think Superman Returns might have just bombed too hard, like, critically.
Yeah.
God, can you imagine the weird alternate reality where they star in a movie crossover together?
Yes, yeah. Because you can... I would... If I was a millionaire, I would pay money for them to do a shot-by-shot remake of Batman versus Superman. And have those two actors in the roles. But if you look back at the like production of both those franchises, like in between both those reboots and the like prospective like older movies, like there was like five like iterations of just trying to like make a new movie, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Uh-huh. And yeah, so the story,
I mean,
for this billboard and this logo is just the producer just wanted that movie to get made. So he was like, oh, let's just throw a logo in here. Like, you need a billboard and this logo is made for this debunked movie now. So just throw it in there.
That's the most insane part of the story to me, is just like, yeah, just throw it in there. Like, we won't actually need to make it, but maybe if people like it, we will.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very crazy. It's very crazy now watching it, since that movie did basically get made.
Oh, yeah.
Very odd.
Probably to the same critical praise that that would have been made to.
Probably, yeah.
So I think we are kind of getting to the point where we introduce actual other characters, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, are you talking about the mother and son?
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's not get there. I think I want to dive into some. I want to dive into some of these differences that you have.
Oh, sure. So, yeah. Well, some of that comes into play with the ending, but yeah.
Well, going back to this trap scene, where he springs this trap from the mannequin that has been moved. Neil, you said that you weren't sure like who moved it. And I think there's a big problem with these monsters, because obviously they moved it and they set up the trap for him. And because the trap is very similar to the way, actually I might be just talking myself out of this thinking, but the trap is very similar to the trap that Will Smith set up earlier.
Sure.
But I think you and I had the same thought, where I was like, did Will Smith just move a mannequin and set a trap and then forget that he did it? Because he's going in like full crazy mode, and it's totally, I can totally believe that he would just just move a mannequin, and then the next day he'd be like, who the fuck moved this mannequin?
Well, maybe if... Yeah, well, yeah. I'm going to save it for, like, the whatever Tyler has for, you know, the differences between the movie and the book. But I think it would have been, like, a cooler story if they just either played up the insanity angle, and maybe that man, like, he looks, and then maybe there's a mannequin there, and then he looks again, and it's not there. Like, or something where it's, like, he goes overboard crazy, or don't make him be crazy at all. So...
Yeah, because how he's...
Well, they even...
He's, like, yelling...
They even mess with the audience, because when he first sees the mannequin, you see its head move.
Oh, really?
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I noticed it because I thought I saw it the first time I saw the movie, and so I was looking for it this time, and I was swore I could see it move. And then, sure enough, when I was looking at the trivia for it, they said they used a mime to replace the mannequin for that really long-distance shot where you see it, and it turns its head just slightly towards Will Smith.
Interesting. Oh, man. It's interesting. Yeah. Yeah, I missed that. So just when he's yelling at Fred, if he's real, I was like, bro, you have lost it. You've lost your mind right now.
Yeah. And see, that the fact that you guys are confused on that is just, it's another illustration for me what a failure this movie was in the both the like production and the adaptation. So,
and it's just,
yeah, but I
just wanted to bring it up just because I thought that this was just a failure of the monsters, even though I thought they were teased very well. But once they're set up, like, you don't, this boss dude, like, he's never like set up at all. So it's like, is he just super smart, or are they all super smart, or like what? Like, and so that was the thing. I think it's interesting if they set up the trap for him, but also I still don't know if that's what the movie is saying, or if just Will Smith is just straight up bonkers.
Yeah, I'm honestly really glad that you guys are fairly unadulterated with your influence of either the book or the alternate ending for this. So I kind of want to jump to that so that I can get your guys' thoughts on the movie without hearing what it could have been. So I'm curious, like, when we get introduced to the female character and the boy that she's taking care of, I don't know, did that work for you guys? Like, for me personally, I was on board with it until they started getting into all the pseudo-religious stuff.
Mm-hmm. I am kind of on the same page as you. It's almost kind of like the movie Logan at that point, like, not nearly as good, but like where it's like these people think they think there is something like a haven or a sanctuary of people out there, just like the kids in Logan think the same thing, like, oh, this place is out there, I know it's out there. But the thing was with Logan, they,
and it's funny, they both got them from X-Men comic books.
Yeah, pretty much. Yes. But like with Logan, you don't see that. Like you still don't know if there's somebody out there. Like they're just on, like, going on hopes and prayers out there. But in this one, it gives you a definitive answer. Like, oh, then does God exist in this reality? And was he really talking to this lady who just knew it was there? Yeah. Or like, what's going on? So that,
wait, I'm confused. How did she know about this settlement?
I thought it was because she said she just knows it's there. Like,
Bruce,
she only heard, I don't know if she heard rumors of it or if something in her head was just saying, hey, go here, something's here for you.
Yeah, I mean, I literally just watched this a few hours ago and I couldn't tell you. But yeah, she somehow tells of a small community that wasn't affected by the virus. I don't think she like really elucidated where she got that information, but she said she knows it because God told her to go or something like that. And so, and then they have the whole classic trope of like, bad shit happened to me, so God doesn't exist. And it's just, it kills me every time that comes up in movies.
I'm going to be honest with you now. I was completely checked out of this movie.
I don't blame you.
I thought this girl and her kid are complete voids of characters. They're very poorly set up. And then when they're in the movie, they're just so just nothings that it was very hard for me to care at all about them.
I'm in the same boat. Mm-hmm. The only saving grace they have is that they bring about my favorite line of the entire movie. And that is when, so essentially they come about like, oh, there's a big pivotal kind of scene right before they show up. I want to touch on it briefly. And that's like Will Smith and them, like, oh, holy cow, there's a lot before this. But like, so spoiler alert, the dog ends up dying.
we skipped him. Yeah. The dog turns into a zombie, gets bitten, turns into a zombie.
Yeah.
And then Will Smith like
just chokes him out. Yeah, just chokes him.
Yeah.
That's pretty sad. Like that's terrible. But yeah, after that, he goes on like,
also there's a big reveal. The big reveal that the dog is a girl. Did you guys?
Oh, no.
Right.
Whoa.
That was.
Yeah. Didn't even. Wow. I didn't.
Twist.
I just thought about that because the dog's name is Sam, and I was like, that's an androgynous name. So, I wonder if the dog is a boy or girl.
Oh, I didn't.
I was thinking the same thing. Well, I think I was thinking the same thing about Will Smith's child, who is played by Willow Smith, his real life daughter, who I thought was a boy. Not Willow Smith. I thought the character was a boy for the entire movie.
Huh.
Until I looked it up and I was like, wait a second.
Anyway, so...
and then I started thinking about the dog's gender, yeah, so I was just questioning
everything.
You were
really checked out, man.
Now, every time you meet someone named Sam, you're going to have to ask them which pronoun they use.
I'm usually pretty good with people.
So the dog ends up dying, and then he goes on like a madman spree where like he goes and like just goes and runs a ton of them over out on like this pier. Mm. And then this woman and child come and save him or whatever. So they take him back to like his house or whatever. And this woman ends up making him breakfast. And Will Smith comes in, he starts eating and he sits down. And then he gets real upset and like chucks his food on the floor or whatever. And they kind of ask him like what all that was about. And my favorite line in this whole movie is like he was saving that bacon that she made for a special occasion or something like that. Like he gets so upset because she cooked all the bacon that he was saving up. And it was funny to me.
It's funny. I actually kind of thought that moment worked, but it was, like we were kind of saying, these characters that have intruded on his life, I feel like it should have been a bigger deal. And they, besides ruining his bacon, they don't really do much except to literally deliver the exposition of where the ending should go, like to this haven place. Yeah. Like that's pretty much it.
Okay. Sorry. This is right before when he goes crazy again, when, they're watching Shrek and he starts to recite every single line in the scene. and it's, there is great reaction shots between the mom and the child where they're just like, looking at each other and then looking back at Will Smith when he's just reciting as the film is going every single line. And honestly, guys, you've all been to parties where like there's that one dude, right? That pushes everyone to watch this one movie because, you know, he hasn't seen it in a long time. And then he's like just dropping every line.
Yeah.
And it's just the worst.
Yeah, Neil, Jesus.
you called me on it. Way to go, guys.
You and Trek, man. You and Trek. Yeah, gosh. And then... yeah, and then so then this is when the zombie vampires show up at his house because they followed. Because
they let him back there.
They followed him the night before. And there's also this like, there's a scene about Bob Marley. They're listening to Bob Marley, and this woman like doesn't know, she doesn't recognize Bob Marley is. And I'm just like, this isn't. Well, there's just like no way no one would know who Bob Marley is, right?
Or at least heard of. It's like, sure, you may not have heard his music, but you've got to have heard like of Bob Marley, right? Come on. Yeah.
No, like so when he says Bob Marley, I can't even remember the name she says instead, but she says something else, Marley.
It's his son.
And
it's Bob
he's
Marley's
like,
son.
No. He's like, no. His dad.
Yeah.
And she's like, what? Like, how would you know who Bob Marley's son is and not know who Bob Marley
was
is?
He popular?
That makes no sense. I don't even remember his name, so apparently
yeah,
not.
The son had a very short, like, run of music. I'm sure he's still active now, but he had a very, like, short, like, run where he was very popular, and he had a couple albums come out, and I wouldn't be surprised if that was around when this movie got made, that was just a reference they dropped for the kids out there.
Yeah. Random.
Yeah, very weird. And then there's this quote. I didn't have the quote, but there's this quote that Will Smith says. It's basically a parable about how Bob Marley got shot He was going to perform at a peace rally. An angry gunman came and shot him the like night before he was supposed to. And then he still ended up playing the peace rally because the evil people in the world don't take a day off, so I can't either. And mm-hmm. that was very good. I thought that was a very good little story. And Will Smith delivered it great.
Yeah.
So that's...
And at this point in the movie, you're like, oh, okay, so they're going to build up this relationship and make us, like, have Will Smith's character get a little more connected to humanity again. Mm-hmm. Wait, they're ending the movie. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes, this was a very, like... Because they're listening to music, like you can see them like dancing to the music, like right after he says that story, and then like of course then they go and fuck and they're in love, and so, but no, yeah, they just cut the zombies broke in and just ruined everything.
Yep. And then we get our climax in the basement lab where he's trying to save the people who are infected, and then he lets him go and lets the girl and the boy go and grabs a grenade and blows everything up for no good reason, really, it seems.
Yeah, he could have just did.
They cornered themselves in a basement with no exit at all. So
yeah, true.
maybe not the smartest move to go into a basement when zombies are swarming your house.
Yep.
So let's run down these changes, because I think you can tell we're pretty bored with this movie. The ending is pretty garbage.
So first I'll ask so you guys have never seen the alternate ending for this movie?
Not
then,
that I'm
right?
aware of, no.
I think I
okay, can
I
you...
think I did, because it I think okay. it's on YouTube, and like when the DVD yeah. release came out, they like posted it, mm-hmm. but I don't remember yeah. what it is. I probably watched it
okay,
once
so
and forgot about it.
It's called an alternate ending, but in this case, it was the original ending that tested very poorly with test audiences. So pretty much everything that you guys have mentioned about like not understanding or feeling confused about this movie and the monsters would have been solved by the original ending. Mm-hmm. And they literally just like cut and paste an ending without changing any of the rest of the movie. And so none of it makes sense anymore. Apparently the test audiences did not like the ending because they wanted Will Smith to kill the monsters. Now, can you imagine an ending where they don't kill the monsters? Like, I just want to, what would you think would happen?
Oh, I assume they escape.
Where he doesn't kill them.
Or they
almost
all die.
So let's step back in time here in the movie to when he captures the female monster. This is the first time where a monster, he even makes note of it. The first time he's seen a monster willingly expose themselves to sunlight, and it's a male monster. Oh, so
God.
We have
I'm not following you.
And then we have a scene later where he's seemingly trapped, maybe by the monsters. Whoa, maybe they're smart. Oh,
uh-huh. Oh, okay.
Wait a minute. The smart monster just wants his girl monster back. Oh
yeah.
My gosh.
Okay.
It makes perfect sense. So instead of curing her, he gives the like anti-cure to her. To make her back into a monster, gives her to the smart monster, and they leave them in peace. That's the original ending.
Huh. Wait, okay. So do you like this ending better?
Oh, this ending is better than the one that they put in the theatrical cut, but it is still miles worse than the book
yeah.
material.
Yeah.
They changed so much shit from the source material, and to the point where it's insulting to even call this movie I Am Legend. Mm. So let's do this. I'm going to rant.
Do it.
So
let's hear it.
Yes.
Okay. The original book, which, like I've said, I have not actually read the book, but I've read the graphic novel. This is almost literally vampires. There's no zombie vampires. Mm-hmm. These are basically vampires, but it's kind of couched in like this sci-fi backdrop where the main character is not a scientist, but he's the only survivor that he can tell. And so he takes it upon himself to like try and figure out what happened. And so he's investigating, like going out, capturing quote unquote vampires, trying to research what's going on with them. He tests them and realizes that this virus has like made them allergic to garlic and sunlight. And so it's like, it's kind of like a scientific version of vampirism. Mm-hmm. Like maybe this is the origin of vampire myths, is this ancient like virus or something. And so he goes out during the daytime and he'll go searching for supplies house to house. And if he finds any sleeping, quote unquote, vampires, he'll put a stake through their heart to kill them. And at night when he returns to his house, all these vampires wake up and they know where he lives, but they can't enter his house because he's got it surrounded with mirrors and garlic and shit. And they
can't walk into his house unless they get invited in.
That's right.
Right.
Well, so I don't remember how they're clear on that point, but effectively their intelligence has been diminished a little bit. And so they've kind of internalized the idea that they're vampires. Mm. And so part of their avoidance of his house is like psychosomatic, because they think that, you know, he might be able to, like some of them, like Christians that get the virus are afraid of crucifixes, but Jews that get the virus are not. Huh. So what? It's like really interesting stuff like that. But they're like outside his house, like screaming his name all night long and driving him insane. And it's terrifying.
Oh, shit.
Like it's fucking terrifying. And so we get to the end of the book and he gets captured by them and he realizes that they're not these mindless monsters. They've actually started developing a medicine that makes it so they don't need human blood anymore. And basically, he's the monster. He's the one going out while they're all sleeping and murdering them in their sleep. Mm. And he has become a legend in the sense that he is the monster for them. So he's not a legend because he did something good. He's a legend because he's the monster in the story. Like if you just flip the perspective, it's fucking genius. Yeah. Like this book is amazing. And it was written in like 1956. Seriously, go check it
out. That is cool. I want that.
It's so fucking cool. And like all the other vampires, people are like sentence him to death. And he's like sitting in his jail cell saying how he can't even criticize them for wanting to kill him. And he's like come to grips with the fact that he's done terrible things and his loneliness has driven him insane. It's so damn good, guys. And it just like makes me so pissed off that they turn these things into these like weird brainless CGI zombie things and then cut the only ending that made them make any sense with the rest of the film.
Yeah.
So,
whoa.
It's this book deserves an actual movie with that as the premise. I don't understand why it's so hard to convince a studio that that is a good story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just make a different movie if you want to do something different.
Yeah. I mean, the title of this movie doesn't even fucking make sense because he doesn't survive long enough to understand that he is the quote. I should look up the quote because it's really cool. I think you guys would like it. Let me grab it real quick.
Yeah, the quote they use in the movie, it ends the movie and it's just kind of like it's her talking. It's this woman talking about Will Smith's character as he's like, he's become a legend because he's the one that like stayed behind to find the cure. But
he never recognizes that he's a legend. So I am legend makes no sense.
Yeah.
But so in the book, this is his final thought as he's sitting in his jail cell before he's executed. He says, "Full circle, a new terror born in death, a new superstition entering the unassailable fortress of forever. I am legend." Fucking great line.
Golly.
So
yeah.
Yeah, this shit is great, and it's just been shit on with these like four different adaptations that do nothing to even touch on the theme that the book is presenting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's such a shame because I don't know who knows if, I mean, I'm sure they'll revisit it someday. And I feel like Hollywood is more inclined to follow source material like by the letter now than it was back then, because this is,
yeah,
I mean, it this movie reeks of like every problem with, you know, these shitty sci-fi movies, that it's, you know, you have to explain what happened. You have to, like, your hero has to be, he has to be a hero. And if he doesn't survive, he has to sacrifice himself. Yep. And, you know, it's like the whole thing with cancer, how it started as a cure for cancer. That is just the dumbest, like, most rote, like, reason for an apocalypse to happen.
Right.
And yeah, it's so bad. And it just like this, like if the original ending was intact with them, the monsters just trying to get the woman zombie back. I feel like it would have made more sense, but I feel like it would have just pissed me off more because it, I feel like the movie just didn't set up that well at all either. Like there was just the storytelling in this movie is just so bad on like all
cylinders.
Well,
yeah, because they go out of their way to make them ugly, stupid CGI monsters. Mm-hmm. And then the original ending was having you have to try and empathize with them. And it's just like, it doesn't work when they are presented that way. Like I'm just imagining a world where we got like the director of the original Let the Right One In,
yeah,
with a small budget making a direct adaptation of the original material, and I'm like, fuck me, that would be so good.
Yeah,
you know what I want? If I was a millionaire, this is a new segment, the if I was a millionaire, the things I would spend my money on. I was going down a rabbit hole of the director of The Bad Batch and oh my god, I'm blanking on her name. Anna Lily Amapour, who did The Bad Batch, which we talked about on this podcast, that or at least I talked about. I was a huge fan of that movie. Keanu Reeves was in it. But she also did A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, which is this great, absolutely amazing black and white vampire movie. And yeah, so I think she should write and direct a I Am Legend movie. So that's what I would do with $1 million. I'd give her I'd give her this movie. So Hollywood, if you're listening, I don't have $1 million right now, but you'd have that idea for free.
Here's an IOU, $1 million.
That's how much it costs to make movies, right?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, let's put this movie away and be done with it, if you guys are fine with that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Let's get into final thoughts. For every movie, we rate Will Smith on a scale of 1 to 5 Wills, and just kind of talking about his performance, and we'll give some final thoughts on the movie. I'm going to give this 2 Wills. I'm going to give this two Wills out of five because there are two scenes that I think Will Smith is absolutely brilliant in, and that is the Bob Marley, the Bob Marley parable, and then the scene where he's chasing down his dog in that dark hallway. I thought that was two pretty great performances by Will Smith. Otherwise,
I love the precedent you're setting for a number of good scenes is the number of Wills we give it.
But yeah, the first act I think is pretty incredible, and the quality of this movie almost falls off a cliff, like right after when he catches the zombie.
Yep, that's like exactly the moment. I think
is the moment where it just craters, just, and it never stops. The crazy thing is, this movie is so bad, it never stops until the end credits hit, and you're like, damn. So, so that's my final thoughts. I'm glad I'm done with I Am Legend, but Tyler, Neil, give your final thoughts first.
For I'm Legend, I'm going to call it I'm Legend and not I Am Legend. I'm Legend, I think it gets, I'm going to give Will also two out of five Wills. I think he does have some pretty solid performances in it. I don't think Will Smith is really the problem in this at all. He does just fine. I think he could have done, I mean, obviously there's better movies of this that could be written out there, but like, I think Will Smith just fine. But it's not really there's nothing riveting or powerful about it. So yeah, I'm going to give it a two.
I think this is gonna sound crazy. I'm gonna give it three Wills with a caveat that you just shut it off after he gets escapes from that building with his dog. Mm-hmm. It's like that's a great short film you just watched, guys. Just stop there.
It's probably like a good 20 minutes, right?
So it's a really well shot, well directed little piece. The rest of the movie doesn't exist. I think you're right, Neil. I don't think Will Smith is the problem with this movie at all. I think he does incredibly well in that tense scene where he's searching for his dog. That scene is seared into my mind as like a great scene in a terrible movie. So. Three out of five Wills for that bit.
All right, let's get into some recommendations. Let's talk about some good stuff.
Yeah.
Neil, what do you got for us?
Sure. I just picked up the new God of War game for PlayStation 4. You guys are Xbox guys, right? Mm-hmm. All right, so you unfortunately probably can't play this, but it's an incredible, unless you also have a PlayStation 4. But God of War game, I put so many hours into it today. It is awesome. It is, if you're familiar with the old God of War games, it's completely different. It's built from like the ground up again. Whereas the first three, I'm going to say three canon ones. I know there was some portable versions, ones that I didn't play. But the first three versions for PlayStation were incredible. Just kind of like a fun super hack and slash game where you fight giant things. Like it's got very, very cinematic like views and action points in it. And it takes place in Greek, and then they kind of wrapped up that storyline in the third one, and then this version kind of starts off and it gets into like Norse mythology. So it kind of takes place in, well, Midgard Earth slash that, and you fight all of those types of beings instead. However, it's got a even more cinematic approach and a more story-driven approach than the last one did, or the last few, which is I would say a welcomed change, even in my kind of gaming history. I'm actually looking for big, more story driven things that are also have good game mechanics and fun. But it's so far, it's incredible. I haven't beaten yet. I've I don't think I've scratched the surface of the storyline yet, but so far of what I've played, it's absolutely incredible. It looks gorgeous. So if you have a PlayStation 4, I'd highly recommend it, especially if you're a fan of the series, because they play very well into the characterization of the main character Kratos very well so far. And they have a big air of mystery around it so far as to why he's in the location that he's in and what he's doing there. So I'm really excited to find out how this all plays out.
Yeah, I am. So I am not a God of War fan. I tried the early games and just could not get into it. Just the like hack and slash and the quick time events, it just did not do it for me. But from what I've seen about this new God of War, it looks awesome.
Yeah,
it looks pretty incredible.
They've refined the gameplay. So it's not as hack and slashy, and there's a lot more tactic, and you have to know your surroundings a lot better in this one.
Yeah, I do not have a PlayStation 4 yet, and this might sound a bit hyperbolic, but this is like the first game that has made me really want one. I was similar, Ben. I played the like God of War collection on the PS3, and I think I got like 2 hours into it, and I was like, nope. But everything I'm reading and seeing about this one is just like, God damn it! I think I'm gonna have to get a PlayStation 4. Combined with also my looking ahead to the new Spider-Man game.
Yeah.
Those two have me super hyped. So I think I'm going to have to get one eventually. It looks incredible.
Tyler, you want to give us your recommendation?
Yeah, so it's probably no surprise. I think you should go out and check out the I Am Legend graphic novel, actually. I didn't spend a whole lot of time talking about the graphic novel specifically, but the art in it is actually amazing. So it's this weird, like, sketchy pen look to it, where it looks very hectic and like almost like things are unraveling. Super cool, super unique. And like I said, it's, as far as I'm aware, I've read the plot synopsis for the original novel, and it's like almost one-to-one exactly covers the entirety of the book. So if you're not much of a book reader or you really enjoy unique graphic novel artwork, definitely go seek that out. It's a great read.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely going to go pick up this graphic novel and read it. It's all in black and white too, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm very interested to read it, and I don't know. Are you going to look up the book, the novel, the original novel?
I'd like to, yeah. I do a lot of audiobooks these days, so I might check it out there, but yeah.
Yeah, I might check out that too, but yeah, I think I am definitely going to check out that graphic novel. All right, I am going to recommend a Netflix series that it's called Ugly Delicious. This is a series it's created and hosted by David Chang, who is a chef. And he owns a bunch of restaurants and is kind of the head chef at many of them. And this is kind of a series of 8 episodes where he... each episode is about a different like type of food. So the first one is about pizza, and then there's tacos and shrimp and fried chicken, and so on. So he's kind of just diving into this whole each of these food groups and like the culture that they're from. So what I think is most interesting about this show is not it is very like food porn. They show a lot of like delicious food, but it's really about like immigration. Like it is like in the tacos episode, there is a lot of talk about, it's p- people from Mexico, they immigrated over to America and they brought this this food to us. And it's kind of about how America is this weird, like, country that has all this food from other countries. And it's just about, like, these stories of these people and, like, where they're from and the food that they make that is from their own culture, but it's not from, like, an American culture that they're in. It's very fascinating. I binged this whole show in, like, a week. Each episode's, like, an hour long, and there's only eight, so it's very easy to kind of just blow through. And I think it's absolutely incredible. David Chang is so, his, like, interest in people's stories is, I think, very inspiring and very, like, it's he makes it easy for you to just keep going from episode to episode. But yeah, that's Ugly Delicious. It's on Netflix. Big fan.
Yeah, you introduced me to that show when I was at your place the other day, and we watched a few episodes back to back. And it's so, like, enthralling to watch someone who's passionate about something and has, like, a legitimate earnestness to the way they speak to people. And it kind of, it felt very casual and almost unscripted. Like, they didn't even know where each episode would go before they started filming, which it was really a really unique way to see a food show, because all those food shows kind of start to feel the same after a while, but this felt really different.
Yeah. Cool. And it's, I think what is so cool about him is he is still a chef that's at the top of his game. So he's an expert. Like, he is not, like, there's a lot of shows that are like this that are like, you know, just some celebrity that's like, I know nothing about this, so let's learn together. But, you know, David Chang, he is an expert on all of this. So you get this passion for food, but then you also get this immense knowledge for, like everything that he's, like, that this show is covering.
Awesome.
Also, I made a comment, Tyler, when we were watching the first episode, that the typography in the show is all over the place, right?
Yeah.
Great.
And so, like, they have, like, you know, when people show up, they have, like, bottom thirds of their name and, like, where they're from. And then when they go around to different cities, there's, like, title cards of, like, you know, Barcelona and whatever. And then there's, and then there's the title cards and the closing credits, and, like, there's, you know, it's a documentary, so there's typography everywhere. And it's every single one in the first episode is a different font. And it completely just racked my brain when I was watching it, because it just drove me crazy.
I think you just lost me on the show. I'm not watching it. I can't do it. I'm out, guys. I'm not doing it.
No. Okay. I'm going to get you back.
Okay. I'm listening.
So, Tyler, you made a joke that you were like, oh, you know, this is the first episode, maybe it's a pilot, and they just have no idea, like, what they want to do. So they're just using every font that they can get a hold of. And I think you're right. I think you are actually right, because the second episode and on, they use the exact same font for everything. And it's all,
yeah, they,
it's all,
they did an A-B test in the first episode and just decided to run it.
Yeah.
Got it.
I wouldn't be surprised if they made the first episode on their own and then Netflix just bought it and was like, yeah, make a bunch more, and then this will just be the first episode.
Yep.
And don't edit at all. Don't change it when you figure out this show. Yeah. Just keep it as is.
We're Netflix. We have Adobe Typekit. We have so many things to choose from.
But yeah, aside from that, great show.
Excellent. Great show.
Okay, that is it for this episode of Credits Due. I'm glad I got a rant in. with Tyler. Neil, you'll have to pick up the slack with your rant next episode.
Oh, gladly. But
I am sure there will be nothing to rant about, because in 2 weeks, our next episode is Suicide Squad, which three of us will enter this movie, and it'll just be who will leave first.
We'll all kill ourselves?
Possibly.
Suicide Squad.
Yeah, God, not looking forward to watching this movie, but gotta do it. Gotta do it. It's for science.
Yep.
But until then, I hope you will rate and review us, and subscribe to our feed. We're on iTunes and Google Play. Send us an email. Maybe something that really bugs you that you want to rant about. Send it our way at creditsduepodcast@gmail.com. That's creditsduepodcast@gmail.com. And until then, Tyler, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at Tyler Owen, and on my game development website, randomseedgames.com.
Neil?
You can find me on Twitter at Dino Neilman.
And you can find me killing zombies and stabbing vampires in the face at over at Twitter at Cron Master. That's CROGHAN Master. And until next time, always remember, Fred, if you're real, you better tell me right now.